Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. We're waiting for our theme. This is Peter Paul Verzola with the new shadow. And what happened to our theme here? Excuse me. Anyway, this is November 17th, and here's some famous birthdays today. Three World War II... here it comes. Oh, well, I'll wait till we finish with this first march to the scaffold, up to the top of the scaffold there. I guess our thing started a little late. We're also using a new system here. Let's see how it sounds. If it sounds good, I will continue with it. Otherwise, we'll go back to some of our older equipment. This I just got today, and we're testing it today, and hopefully it works out very well. Well, we got rid of, we didn't chop off anybody's head under the guillotine, although there are several deserving politicians and media people out there, and poverty profiteers. Anyway, in 1887, Field Marshal Bernard Law Montgomery, whom Patton called the best general the British had in World War II, and that wasn't saying much. Patton was pretty blunt. He was also born earlier in November. And I don't have Erwin Rommel's birthday, but he was also born in November. And then for people who are like the actors and information, the guy who invented the method of acting, Lee Strasberg, was, I think, an immigrant from Vienna. He was born today in 1901. And among the most famous method actors are Marlon Brando, who was originally from northern Illinois, up near where I grew up. Then in 1916, birthday of Shelby Foote, great historian and a raconteur. He died recently, and some of his stuff you can see on the History Channel. And in 1925, Rock Hudson, that's his stage name, was born in Winnetka, Illinois. And he served in the U.S. Navy, I think, in the late 1940s. His real name was Roy Scherer, S-C-H-E-R-E-R. And I believe my speech teacher, Professor Dolly Thornstrom, bless her heart, I had her for four classes. I think she tutored him and some others from Northwestern University. I also sat in Marion Kim Novak's seat several years later, after she had been a student of Professor Thornstrom. And in 1942, famous director Martin Scorsese was born. We have some interesting deaths, because the nation is still focused on terrorism. In 1961, Robert Stedham, a U.S. Navy sailor in civilian clothes, those special divers, underwater warriors. He was a passenger on a TWA flight 847, and I think he was murdered at the Athens airport and his body thrown on the tarmac. Seems the TWA has had a lot of problems in their later years. It used to be a great airline, Trans World Airlines, that was what it stood for. And in 1848, we had Robert Owen. This is important because we keep hearing more and more in the news about co-ops, and the founder of co-ops, Robert Owen, died in 1858, Englishman. And then the famous Rodin, famous sculptor, August Rodin, you see a lot of his sculptures around, very beautiful stuff, very well done. He died in 1917. And then we had on this day, and then James Johnson, the famous black musician and composer, contemporary, I think, of W.C. Handy and Louis Armstrong. He died today. And Villa-Lobos, who was self-taught, Brazil's greatest composer, he died today. It's an interesting history. In 1558, Elizabeth I became England's greatest queen, one of that country's greatest monarchs. She ascended the throne after Mary, Queen of Scots, Mary, her half-sister, the Catholic Mary, Bloody Mary, she was unfairly called. She died after a short reign. And Elizabeth was practically in the Tower of London. And when you went to the Tower, you didn't come out except in a horizontal manner. Your head was chopped off or you died. So she had one of the longest reigns of a woman of any country in history. And a great reign it was, although some people think she was anti-Catholic. Also, last week we talked about the gunpowder plot where Catholics who were opposed to the repressive measures of the British Parliament, they tried to blow up Parliament, Guy Fawkes, and that was last week we discussed that. In 1800, Congress met for the first time in Washington, D.C. Maybe if they met less often, they could do less damage. In 1851, this is important because of their increase in postal rates, would you believe the first one-cent penny stamp was issued? And a long way, I can remember when the stamps were 5 cents and then they went up. And we had two deliveries on Saturday. And even with Christmas coming up, I understand that the post office may cancel Saturday deliveries and you can only get your mail if you have a post office box or a drop box at like UPS or those places. In 1868, the Suez Canal opened, and that's very important because it shortened the ships didn't have to travel around completely around Africa to go to the Pacific. And then in 1989, the first we had the Velvet Revolution, where Czechoslovakia broke away. The students started protesting, and that brought down the communist government. I can remember in 1968 when we had Prague Summer, where I think it was Dubček, who was the communist leader, and he tried to liberalize Czechoslovakia, and the Russians moved in and with their usual heavy boots and brutal force arrested Dubček, although he did survive, unlike in Hungary in 1956, where Janos Kadar, I understand they castrated him, and they also killed a guy named Imre Nagy, who was the premier or prime minister of Hungary. Things have come a long way in the old Russian bloc. And then in 1993, we had the NAFTA agreement approved by Congress, and there's a lot of controversy about that so-called free trade. Then in 2003, Arnold Schwarzenegger, an Austrian legal immigrant, in a recall election against Governor Gray Davis, who incidentally served in the Vietnam War. He was a captain, and I don't think he was in the JAG Corps, though. He was recalled by the voters of California, who were angry about a lot of things, and Schwarzenegger became governor and was reelected. And I think he'll be very glad to get out of Sacramento because he's leaving the state. The state is not going to recover on the remainder of his watch. We're going to hear more and more about, not only about the so-called terrorist trials in the Federal District Court in New York, in that circuit. That's very interesting that there's a lot of controversy about bringing combatants to a trial in a federal court. And a lot of these controversies go back, one of them goes back to the Civil War, a famous Civil War case, which I won't get into today, but another one is a case which I was involved in as a member of a civil liberties group, asking President Ford for a pardon for Rose Diaquino, Tokyo Rose, who was railroaded here in San Francisco, one of three major cases in the history of this city where people were railroaded, one involved in the 30s, the longshoremen, who there were union riots along the waterfront, and these guys, Mooney and another guy, got railroaded into state prison. There was Tokyo Rose, who the law was, and this is interesting, if you remember the American who was captured with the Taliban, he was tried in federal court in Virginia, that circuit. And the law is when American commits treasonous acts against the country, if he is captured or picked up, that person is supposed to be brought to the nearest federal court. And you notice that the nearest federal court, I guess, would in John Walker Lynn's case was Virginia. And in Tokyo Rose's case, it should have been Honolulu. But interestingly, The Justice Department under Biddle at the time and Truman administration decided that they couldn't get a hanging jury because there were too many Asians in Honolulu where she would have been tried, and of course she shouldn't have been tried. The whole thing was a kangaroo court affair just stirred up by one of the worst media people in history, Walter Winchell, who committed other media frauds such as the Elliot Ness. Elliot Ness had very little to do with bringing down Al Capone. It was a Treasury Department accountant who got Al Capone's books, and that's how he got him on income tax evasion. It wasn't Elliot Ness, played by Robert Stack in The Untouchables, or what some people are calling The Unthinkables. That's all political fiction. But anyway, she was tried in San Francisco. I knew the lawyer, Wayne Collins Sr. He's dead now, and he took the case. She was convicted in federal court here in San Francisco, and we'll show some interesting things about that on our YouTube Amicus Veritas site. excuse me. But he died. She was convicted and sentenced to a woman's prison in, I think, the East. I met her in Chicago when I was visiting, and family name was Taguri. And she just was very stoic about the whole thing. When she was picked up, she was pregnant. She had married a Filipino who was barred from ever entering the United States. It's really horrible what they did to her. And the other case, the railroading case, is still going on. That of the 18-year-old sailor, he's now 31, Stephen Neri, a case that ranks with one of the biggest abortions of justice in military and civilian court history. He wasn't court-martialed. He should have been. That's another story. But anyway, we'll get into that because there's so many facets to it. It affects, it's a case of national and international significance because of all of the people involved and what they were involved in, what they tried to cover up and what they dumped on him, and how a federally funded lesbian NAMBLA group came into a court and openly lobbied juries. And the judge was a questionable immigrant from Alberta, Canada, this guy Ryan, who had one of the worst records in the Justice Department as a U.S. attorney. Half of the people in the Northern District who were attorneys in the office resigned rather than work with him or put his name on their resumes. That's a story in and of itself. But go to our website on Stephen Neri, N-A-R-Y, and spent about 13 years of work on that case, started by a lawyer who, Raul Amundsen, who by marriage, one of his daughters married a descendant, a distant relative of General George Collette Marshall, the Chief of Staff in World War II, contemporary of Bernard Law Montgomery and General Patton and Rommel, among others. Among our upcoming shows, and then I'll get into something very interesting about the public health care appropriations since 1946, the Hill-Burton Act. That's Lister Hill was a representative from Alabama, and Burton was not the Burtons of California, who are scum. Burton from Ohio, Senator Burton from Ohio, put together a bill. Truman, when he succeeded Roosevelt, tried to get a national health care plan, and he didn't get that, but what they got was funding of community health care clinics, which provide medical services for low and no income people, and even illegal aliens cannot be denied medical care. This whole big lie about people run to the emergency room and get care. What happens if you go to the emergency room and you don't have insurance, and even if you do, if it's not an emergency, they turn you away and say, go to the drop-in clinic at the hospital or go to the community health care clinic. Or if you insist, they're going to sock you, I think it's $350. Which insurance companies are yelling about because, you know, if it's not a medical emergency, not a heart attack or something like that, somebody dying of a gunshot or a knife wound, you shouldn't be in the emergency room. And there's about $8 to $10 million, maybe more, that was appropriated in the last Congress for the community health care centers around the country. But anyway, I'll talk about our upcoming shows later, but I want to talk about, I don't understand why the media is ignoring a $10 billion program. But what's interesting about these community health care programs, which have been in existence since the late 40s, there are an estimated 6,000 of them across the country. Now, this is the information put out. I've been researching this. Now, here's what they say. They are community-based organizations that offer essential primary and preventive care services to populations with limited access to health care. Services available can range from basic doctor's visits, immunizations, health screenings, laboratory and radiology, pharmacy, dental, and mental health services. Typically, the services are provided on a sliding scale based on an individual's ability to pay or not pay. Health centers frequently extend beyond the center's walls to better reach underserved population. Now, the community health care centers have cared for 16 million people across the more than 6,000 locations across the country. Of those served, here's the stats, 71% are below the 100% level of the federal poverty guidelines, 92% are below 200%, 40% are uninsured, while 35% are enrolled in Medicaid or the SHIP programs. And here's the ethnic breakdown. 60% are Hispanic, African American, or blacks. I don't like that phrase, Native American. And 35% of them are under the age of 20. And they even offer AIDS treatment or preventive care for that. They don't do mastectomies, liver transplants, or heart transplants, or foreskin restoration. This is a gay thing. And they certainly don't do transgender operations. In San Francisco, which is so wacky, they got a program for city workers that provides $50,000 for an operation for somebody who claims he or she is transgendered. I never understood this. But anyway, someone found out that they could go to Bangkok for $5,000, which included the airfare and the operation. And of course, they should, and some cynics remarked they ought to stay there because they're costing this city, which is bankrupt, and this state, which is bankrupt, many millions of dollars for this operation, let's put it that way. I just don't understand. The wording in George Bernard's Pygmalion, which became the show My Fair Lady, there's a line in there that Henry Higgins, who was played by Rex Harrison, said, "I don't understand, why does a woman want to become a man?" And that show came out in 1959. And I think that rings true. I don't understand it, and I don't understand a man who wants to become a woman. You know, it's just, there's no transplant of certain basic organs. You know, but there are people who think that they ought to be that way. I don't, you know, and I think it's they want to do that, then they should do it on their own nickel. Well, it's not a nickel. It's pretty expensive to do that, to have those surgeries. I do not know, we can't get this information out of Pelosi, the Lucretia Borgia of American politics, if included in her so-called health care comprehensive plan, if transgendered operations are included. The question has come up from several sources. Are needle exchange funding included in that over 1,000-page bill? And I don't know of any media appeal to ask that question. Oh, no, one person did. I think it was Hannity. And there may have been others. Excuse me. I want to be fair. But these are issues. And, of course, it's very interesting. I'll post the pictures on one of my websites or the YouTube Amicus Veritas. Russia has experienced a growing number of children who are junkies, and we have pictures of them shooting up. It makes you sick that a generation of youth, they have a serious alcohol problem over there, not only among their youth, but in their military, and you should see some of the pictures. If you think our boys are bad, these guys are even worse. They're literally and figuratively falling down in the street and wherever they're at, so that's going to be interesting. But you know, these are questions that need to be asked. And, of course, Pelosi did promise, she made the statement that she was going to post her proposal, or that the House of Representatives, Democratic caucus's proposed health care so-called reform on the World Wide Web for at least 72 hours. So she broke that promise, and that's not unusual with her because she's broken many promises. You know, and, of course, it's a convenient politics with that awful woman. Now, here's some other stats. The insurance status of these people who go to the community health care clinics, and you get good health care there. And you don't, I haven't heard of any malpractice lawsuits. By the way, a lot of malpractice lawsuits, which are stirred up by greedy lawyers, and having worked in that field, a lot of those suits, plaintiffs lose. And of course, there's one thing that people should realize with a lot of these professions or occupations, whether they're lawyers, doctors, veterinarians, judges, or whatever. It's what I call the code of professional omerta. And what that is, that a group, people in these occupations do not like to talk badmouth fellow members of that occupation or that profession, at least to the public. There are whistleblowers who are concerned about the quality and the respect that the public would give their profession, but when they hear about all these quacks, these fee fraud artists, such as in the Steve Neri case, he was ripped off of $35,000, which was a loan from a doctor, a very competent doctor, the famous Dreisbach family of the Eisenhower Medical Center down in Southern California. We'll get into that another day. But we have these lawyers who rip off clients, and we're seeing more and more lawyers, and there should be more, who have been prosecuted for all kinds of crimes. In fact, the biggest slaughter of lawyers in U.S. history occurred here in San Francisco at 101 California. We'll get into that. It's quite interesting what happened to this guy who they took all his money, and maybe they were well-intentioned, but he didn't see it that way. He got up, he went into their office and blew them away, and a lot of innocent people not involved in his particular case were injured or killed. And the law firm is very sleazy, is connected to a lot of this real estate racketeering. But that should have been a lesson. And there are other cases of people, drawing a bead on lawyers who they think have wronged them or ripped them off or are incompetent or whatever. So it does happen out there, and it's happening more and more. We've seen more and more lawyers, whether they're public defenders, prosecutors, and there's a myth about, quote, a guy you hear, oh, he was a prosecutor, therefore he walks on water, he's infallible, doesn't make a mistake, and is always standing up for justice. That's not true. They're more interested in their salaries, and some of them who are on cocaine and who are into pornography, and we'll name some of these people because they got a track record, and who take bribes or cover up for bribes and allow jury tampering and false evidence in the cases that they're involved with or connected to. Getting back to get off of that jag, getting back to the ethnicity, this is a new one. 36.3 are white or Caucasian, 36.1, this is interesting, Hispanic or Latino, 23% are this figure are black Americans. I don't use African American. 3.5% are Asian or Pacific Islander, and 1.1 are American Indian or Alaskan Native. Now, the Department of Interior, where I worked for one of their programs, the Indian Health Service, they have their own, and it's supposed to have been funded by the Department of Interior, but there's been so much corruption and incompetence and just outright neglect of Native Americans, and I'm being part Native American, I am somewhat biased, although I've seen this myself. I don't know where this money is coming from, but they do show up. When they do come to the cities, a lot of them are not prepared. I remember working in the 80s in back east, and the Indians would sleep with their dogs in their cars in the cold weather. It was really pathetic. We did what we could to help them. And then this age group, now this is interesting. To age 19, it's pretty high, 35.6. And then the next one is 56.4, ages 20 to 64. And then the Medicare age is 7.1, 65 and up to whatever, how long people live in our society. I mean, we don't have many people living 100 or 100 years old or more. But this is not talked about. I mean, I don't know how the heck can the media ignore, unless there's an agenda out there, and it appears to be, a program that's been around this long, that serves this many people, that is this widespread, and is this effective, and has this kind of quality. I mean, you don't hear about malpractice at community health care clinics. And they also provide, some of them help people adopt. They give them birth control or family planning, and then AIDS prevention and VD and the other diseases associated with sexual behavior, the dangerous sexual behavior that causes diseases. And there are other diseases there, the skin-eating diseases that they don't talk about when these people are whoring around. They pick up all kinds of diseases, and it eats the skin, and it's just horrible. You don't want to be near that. But upcoming, we're going to continue our I'm editing down the tapes of the interviews I did for KLW and Western Public Radio of these famous military people, these people who were involved in our military campaigns or campaigns of their home country. Some became Americans, and others have emigrated here. It's surprising, a lot of people don't know this, but many, the Brits seem to like California. There are quite a few over here, and I've met several of them who are retired. I guess the sun never set, may have set on the British Empire, but not on the Englishmen here in California. And then we have others. And then those of you who have seen the 48 hours thing, A Case for Murder, on the Hugues de la Plaza case, we'll get into that because there's some interesting aspects that I came across. I used to say hello to the guy. Very interesting that why the French government has this intense interest on this case. They were French media people. I was interviewed by a couple who were over here, and with some very interesting connections, and I put two and two together because, you know, they're visitors and people people who are have dual citizenship or have come here on green cards or not landed immigrants, but are immigrants who are legally in this country and have been here. And there are people who have been raped, who have been murdered, but they've never, in my experience, have had this kind of home government intervention and interest in their cases. This is the first time I've seen this, although there is that unusual treaty between France and the United States. But, the neighborhood where Hugues de la Plaza lived and died was just swamped with media people. And, of course, I captured some of this on video, and we'll be putting it up and some other aspects of this case. One thing comes out of this case that they did not bring up, and, of course, nobody's thinking about this, because we had Murphy, the investigator in the case, had another case which also involved tenants, and that was the infamous lesbian dog bite death case where this lesbian, minding her own business, was brutally mauled by two vicious Parisiano dogs, huge dogs. I met a couple. They're pretty ugly. And the question is, they knew these dogs were dangerous in this apartment building, and why did the owner and the management company allow those tenants, the two lawyers, one was disbarred and the other still in prison, keep dangerous animals? And in the Hugues de la Plaza case, tenants, there was a drug dealer in the building, and we think that's what may have happened. He was a target of opportunity. But what was I going to say? The tenants were concerned about the lack of security devices. And so this is an issue for tenants who live in neighborhoods where there's a lot of problems, car thefts, which are prominent in this neighborhood. I've had three vehicles stolen, drug dealers, prostitutes, and this other kind of street mayhem and violence, whether or not the landlord or the management company is responsible for putting up motion lights and bars on the windows to protect the tenants that live on their properties. It's a public policy issue, and people ought to think about that. Anyway, we'll be back Thursday, and we'll hopefully have Colonel Hodges, who served in both the British and the American armies, and he did one interview, which I own, and we'll have an excerpt of that. And then San Francisco's greatest mayor, who also saved diplomatic relations between the United States and Russia, we'll have that. And a lot of things, advice that he gave to mayors. He founded a dairy company, which was later sold to Borden. So we'll have that. And a salute to Australia and New Zealand in January. So this is Peter Paul Verzolo working with the New Shadow. Go to YouTube, Amicus Veritas, our website. Thank you for listening. Okay. Okay.